it's part of a multi-channel ordering strategy for brands. There are some people that are going to like and prefer walking up to a kiosk. Let me give you an example. We have kiosks at Krispy Kreme in Times Square. One of the most used features at that Krispy Kreme on our kiosk is switching languages. So you go up to a kiosk in a country that you don't know how to speak English and you don't want to read in that language, go ahead and switch it to Spanish. Go ahead and switch it to a different language. Because guess what? Digital menus can do that.
Welcome to Whisking It All with your host, Angela Esposito, co-founder of Whisk.ai, a food and beverage intelligence platform. We're going to be interviewing hospitality professionals around the world to really understand how they do what they do.
Welcome to another episode of Whisking It All. We're here today with Brandon Barton, the CEO of Byte. Brandon, thank you for being here with us.
Angela, thank you so much for having me on. Pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat about your story, how you got, you know, the idea for Byte, what kind of problem you guys are solving. So we'll get into all that, how you're employee number four at Resy, right? So like super interesting stuff, but maybe to just kick things off, little intro, can you just explain what is Byte?
Yeah, sure. So Byte is the leader of self-service software for restaurants, okay? When you walk into a restaurant nowadays, sometimes you'll see a big touchscreen that allows you to order and gets that order into the kitchen, allows you to skip the line, less wait time, less kind of pressure to get your order in with people waiting behind you. We do a lot of those for some major brands like Krispy Kreme to Bluestone Lane to Togo's out west. We're pretty fortunate. And our philosophy as a company is to make sure that we are going to enhance and elevate hospitality everywhere. The idea is that if you can add something to the guest experience, it has to be something that's going to also elevate the hospitality side of it, not just be something that's a plug-in. So we really take a guest-centric perspective when building out our product.
Love that. And we'll definitely get deeper into it. I want to know the details on Byte and get some examples and wins you guys have seen and all that good stuff. But I always
That's fun. It's boring. Let's get into the other stuff.
Yeah. No, that'll be good. But I always like to understand how people got to where they were, right? So it's always interesting to understand people's backgrounds and what motivated them. So
yeah, for sure.
Your background's super interesting. Like I said, I know you were the fourth employee at Resy. I know you were, experience at Union Hospitality, Union Square Hospitality Group, yeah. and Patina Group, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe just hearing it from you, I'd love to understand, A, what got you into the hospitality space in general? And then get from there, where the idea behind Byte first kind of was born.
Yeah, I mean, getting into the hospitality industry was a bit of a, perhaps a happy accident. I grew up humbly, from humble means in Brooklyn. And as a kid, I wanted to make money. And that, you know, when you're young, you do that by hustling, shoveling snow in the winter, yeah. And selling Christmas trees and doing all the stuff, okay? All the stuff that we did to just make a little extra scratch. Yeah. And when you get of age, you can go and work as a busboy. So I worked as a busser at a restaurant called Skinflint, which is still in Bay Ridge. It's incredible. It was the first time I was introduced to the idea that an English muffin could be the burger bun. So really great burgers. And I worked a busboy, waiter, bar back, everything there. I was fortunate enough to go off to get into and then go to Cornell. But I actually went as an engineer and I was aware that the hospitality program existed, but I didn't think that was like my path. After about a half a semester of engineering, I ran to the hospitality program because engineering was very hard and it wasn't coding. It was, civil engineering, but, I was out. That was not my path. But I was fortunate to land in the best hotel school in the entire world at Cornell. Long story short, after that, I got into operations and then I just understood that the scalability of my own world was limited in operations. And you're always focused on what's going on within the four walls of the restaurant. And the truth of the matter is I wanted my scope to be bigger than that. And so one fateful day, the CEO of Avero had lunch at Tabla, we started talking, and you know, I had you know, an interview a week later and a job a week after that, and was going to work for some company dealing with tech stuff, and I didn't know if I liked it. I spent 8 years there, and then that got, you know, I learned everything about restaurant technology and SaaS starting there.
That's amazing. And then I know from there, I know that's really, really cool. Cause yeah, I know Avera on the sales analytics side are, you know, quite big, to put it lightly. But from there, I know you were also at Resy, but what's interesting is, you know, it's one thing working at a company, but being such an early employee, I think it was, if I'm not misquoting you, employee number four, and you know, Resy was obviously got pretty big and got acquired by, who was it again? Was it American Express?
American Express.
But yeah, so I'd love to understand what that looked like, because you know, going to a company that has that foundation versus, you know, wearing many hats, like what did that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm super grateful to the team at Resy for giving me a shot to run sales and operation for the, you know, the 3.5 years that I was there. You know, I started, there was three engineers, two founders, and myself. And Gary Vee was around too, as a founder. You know, it was a fun time, and it was great because I had taken a lot of what I had learned at Avera and been able to piece together the strategy of what needed to happen at Resy. And so it was definitely trying it for the first time as being that level of a leader, but yet knowing, having a lot of confidence in what we were doing. I mean, we could talk for hours about all the trials, tribulations, turns that we made there to make it work. But if you remember, the biggest thing was clearly we were going up against OpenTable,
right,
which at the time would recently been purchased for, I believe, $2.6 billion by, I guess, Expedia or whoever owns them now.
That's slipping my mind.
I'm forgetting. Yeah. I'm slipping my mind at the moment. But at the same time, so they were just purchased. OpenTable was just purchased. At the same time, there was a crop of Priceline. Sorry, there you go. Expedia being their competition.
Yeah,
by Priceline. Yes. And at the same time, there was a Reserve and Table 8. I think when it was the name of one, and I Know the Chef, and a bunch of other competitors in this, like, you know, pay for access space type of thing.
Right.
So it's just like hyper competition at all times. And the one thing I'll say about Resy that it, just one anecdote, and we could go into more if you want, but first 15 months of Resy, I made a phone call to every restaurant that got reservations from Resy to ensure that the guests were in the proper book with the proper name and everything. So every single day at starting at 4 o'clock Eastern thereabouts to, I don't know, let's just say 8 o'clock Eastern, because that was when the West Coast folks would have gotten their information about who was coming. I was just offline. Did not matter what was going on. I could be, you know, with my parents, I could be with my girlfriend at the time who turned into my wife. Didn't matter. It was 4 o'clock hits, I'm going into a hole somewhere and I'm calling 150 restaurants.
At the time, were you calling because, like, the idea was to make sure the reservations that were made through the platform were actually on the books of the restaurant? Like,
yeah, there's the handoff. We were not at the beginning of the rest of Resy. We were not the reservation book of record, right? Everyone still had OpenTable, and we were offering 2 to 3 great guests that would come that night, and great parties, I should say, right? And so you got to make sure that it's in the book. So when the guest walks up and they say, "Hey, it's Angelo, I'm here for my party of four," and they're like, "Who are you? I booked this on Resy. What's Resy?" I mean, that happened. Right? And so, you know, and kind of, you know, if you want to just like tie the thread, you know, you work for Union Square Hospitality Group. The reality is that, like, all you do is care about guests. You care about your team and you care about guests.
Yeah.
And that doesn't go away. And so bring that over to Resy and it's like, wait a minute, there's somebody who could show up tonight who doesn't have a reservation, is going to be embarrassed in front of the date that they're on or the business dinner that they're on. They entrusted us with that information to try to get that reservation for them, and they're going to show up and not have it. No way. No, I'll call 500 restaurants for, you know, 7 days a week.
That's
no
crazy
problem.
That's crazy. Yeah. And then, so let me ask you this. So I'm sure obviously you learned a lot. I can only imagine the startup environment, obviously Whisk, you know, I started myself. So I can only imagine how much you've learned over the years. What was the kind of catalyst to then start, you know, Byte? Like, what was the idea behind? What was the problem you saw that you're like, I want to solve this?
Yeah, yeah. And so it's funny because you're saying certain words and I'm going to twist them a little bit.
Yeah, please, please.
I joined Byte. I joined Byte.
Okay.
So Byte was founded by two incredible folks, Stas and Jeff. They're both co-founders of the company, in the company still, work alongside me to make everything happen. And they had initially started the company as like an iPad menu, iPad wine list type of company. Okay. They were in the midst of a pivot to self-service kiosks, to kiosk ordering on an iPad, right? If you can recall, this is around the time where Shake Shack had just opened up Astor Place, the Astor Place Shake Shack, and they in this Astor Place Shake Shack, they had 8 kiosks or something like that. And it was like, there was no, every order went through the kiosk. Also, by the way, probably 10 years prior to that, McDonald's had already had kiosks up and running and in some of their stores. And this is, you know, so I said to myself, if McDonald's needs this technology and Shake Shack needs this technology, and they both built it themselves, they both went ahead and built this in-house, I said, this is going to be important. I confirmed that with the Shake Shack team, obviously having the relationship with them from Union Square, the Union Square days. Right. I confirmed that that was an important thing for them. And so I sat down with these two founders who said, we want to hire you as a sales consultant. And about 15 minutes into the conversation, I was like, number one, like, you want me as a consultant 60 hours a week. That doesn't make any sense. Like, this is a full-time job. Okay.
Yeah.
Number two, I'm all in, right? I don't want to consult because I think there's a big company here.
Wow.
And then, you know, cheers to Jeff, you know, who was acting as a CEO, was a CEO initially, I don't know, something like 6 months later, as the news of Resy's acquisition, came about, it was clear that, you know, it would be a decent move to have us switch seats from a strategy perspective. And so Jeff is doing incredible things in the company and he really gets to play the founder role. And, you know, there's not anybody who you'd meet in the industry who doesn't love Jeff Hahn. He's the best. Meanwhile, I can get into the weeds on, you know, sales ops, you know, a little bit of product, when I get dangerous and, you know, and try to make this thing hum. And it's been really an incredible, group effort.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thanks for that clarification. I didn't realize that, but that's really cool. And so, you know, from when you joined, like, to now, what were some things that you, or challenges you saw, right? Cause I think, you know, obviously there's other digital, solutions. I think COVID probably accelerated some of those, at least what I've seen, you know, some of that. So I'd love to hear from you. Like, what does that look like? How do you think about that when it comes to, you know, different solutions being out there? Who is Byte perfect for? And like, what's your, you know, differentiation?
Yeah, for sure. I would, for our space of kiosk, COVID was a decelerator. Because you remember when you wore, you know, plastic gloves to go grocery shopping and, you know, put a gas mask on to go, you know, to go out of the house.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, people were scared of touching stuff, for a while, which was interesting. Mm. And then of course the rise and then rapid fall of the mighty QR code, which, we, by the way, have our own QR code product as well. And my marketing and product team hate when I actually give my opinion here, which is I personally, as a guest, don't like using a QR code to order food because I think a 3.5 inch screen is not big enough to navigate a menu for the first time.
Yeah.
You've never seen a restaurant in a full service restaurant hand you a menu the size of a phone. That's purposeful. Okay. Because it would never be able to properly allow you to browse. Okay. Mm. it's annoying to have to click so many times. Anyway, sorry, team.
No, I'm with you there. I prefer the menu too. I'm with you. Like, there are certain places where you can get away with it if it's a small menu, fine. But in general, it's like, just give me the menu. I like to see everything. I like to have that experience. Yeah. Like,
but in our ICP, the people who we really want to meet and talk to, which is quick service and fast casual restaurants. Typically, you probably have like 5 stores at a minimum to really want to think about your guest experience in the way that we do it. Okay, so 5 stores to 5,000. Okay, so it's a pretty wide swath. Right. But if you're in those restaurants, you don't get a menu. You don't get handed a menu. So what's the best next step? You have a beautiful 22-inch, 32-inch screen that you can walk up to and order. And the reality is that it is now being seen, and there's all sorts of surveys and stuff that are saying that guests prefer this experience. And why do they prefer it? There was a Nation's Restaurant News survey of like 60% of guests would prefer to use a kiosk. Why do they prefer it? You can take your time. There's no pressure. You can order and then get back to doing whatever you want to do rather than waiting on a line. From a cost perspective, you can have many kiosks where you might only have the ability to have 2 cashiers open or 3 cashiers open or 1 cashier open, even worse. So it just offers an opportunity to be able to kind of do your thing and then get back to whatever you're doing, listening to your podcast, watching a YouTube video, or texting your friends. And then as it relates to the difference between, let's say, this and other ordering channels, I mentioned a QR code. We've had restaurants that have run with QR codes and kiosk at the same time. The data's in. People prefer kiosk over QR codes. It makes sense when you think about it, because when you pull out your own phone, I promise you, most of you, if you just grab your phone, look at it right now, it has a notification for something. Okay. Yeah. And so that's just a distraction. It's just in the way of, oh my God, oh, I forgot to, forgot to check in on this person. Oh, let me check this text message. What's this snap about? And what happened in this news flash from Apple? Okay. Oh man, I forgot. I'm supposed to be ordering. Right. and so it does become inefficient rather than walking up to something that has a single purpose to do that. But in general, and I get asked this question quite a bit, like, well, do you think it's going to go away or what? It's part of a multi-channel ordering strategy for brands. Right. There are some people that are going to like and prefer walking up to a kiosk. Let me give you an example. We have kiosks at Krispy Kreme in Times Square. One of the most used features at that Krispy Kreme on our kiosk is switching languages. So you go up to a kiosk in a country that you don't know how to speak English and you don't want to read in that language. Go ahead and switch it to Spanish. Go ahead and switch it to a different language. Because guess what? Digital menus can do that. You can't ask the cashier to find somebody who speaks Mandarin in the restaurant, okay?
Right.
So there's always going to be this use case, similar to how restaurants have a drive-through. And that is, does somebody who orders in a drive-through always order in a drive-through? No. I used to order in a drive-through on my way into work sometimes to pick up a coffee on the way. And then sometimes I'd want to sit in the restaurant and pop open a laptop and work. I mean, there's just different use cases, and it's just one of many. And then sometimes it's okay if you know what you want in advance and you order ahead, and you know you don't want to stand in the sweet green line and you order ahead so that you can just pick it up off that beautiful shelf.
That makes sense.
So all of these channels will be active, and you just got to meet the guests where they are.
That makes sense. Meet the guests where they are. I love that. And what would you say is the main pushback that like someone might give, right? So for some restaurants, right, like assuming they're the right fit, like what's the typical pushback that you guys might get?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now people are trying to figure out how to make kiosk work for them, okay? And so it's not as simple as just saying, I'm going to plop this thing in and it's going to work. And right. when you think about the analogy of a drive-through, you can really start to figure that there's a lot of angles that you need to think about as to how to make it work. You certainly couldn't just put a drive-through in, put the technology in and say, team, go. But there's training for that team on how that's going to go, how the transactions are going to go. There needs to be training for your counter staff or your cashiers, so to speak, when should they be saying, hey, kiosks are open, go ahead and order, versus When should they be paying attention to guests and also directing people to cashiers? Or maybe there's a line of five people and you say, hey, folks, if anyone wanted to use a kiosk, go ahead and do it. This stuff helps to incorporate this into the guest experience if necessary. Also, where you put the kiosk matters. Put the drive-through on the back of the restaurant and see if anyone sees it and gets into it. No, of course not. And so if you don't put the kiosk in the right place, you're going to fail at it. So I think talking about pushback, I think there's some things that people need to think about and work through and how this is going to work for my concept. Right now, we've never met a brand that has not found the return on investment from our product. And I would bet that other kiosk companies can say the same thing. If you were to ask me to bet, I think in the next few years, you're going to see kiosks at every single fast casual and quick service restaurant. And I'm not the only one saying that. The leaders of Restaurant Brands International are saying that. The leaders of Inspire Brands are saying that. You're seeing restaurants trying to get to what they're calling 100% digital ordering. And there's so many benefits to this, including being able to maybe tell Angelo the special that he might like because of the things he's ordered in the past.
That's really interesting. And I'm curious to see, like, where do you see the evolution of digital ordering, right? So, like, you touch on a bit of, like, you know, the client experience, but I'd love to see, like, you know, as more restaurants are adopting this and it's becoming more common and there's a clear ROI, which is awesome for restaurateurs, where do you see, like, the evolution, you know, the digital ordering 2.0, let's say, or kiosks?
Yeah, I mean, look, right now we're in a space where we're getting analog orders digital. The next phase is to make that digital order personal, okay? And so, you know, if we know it's you through a number of different ways, Byte has the ability to use facial recognition, for example. So I don't even need to know it's Angelo. Uh-huh. But maybe I can know it's you and what you've ordered last time based off of your biometrics, okay? I can make suggestions to you that you might like, okay? I might be able to tell you, here's the thing you ordered last time. It's one of the greatest features that we have. It's not just what you ordered last time, but it's what you ordered along with the exact modifiers that you ordered it with. So I love kava and I like my bowl a certain way. I love double the feta. I love double the tahini. Okay. And I'm okay to pay for it. That's fine. Yeah. But every time I got to tell the person the same thing.
Right.
What if I could just go in and one click my way into the thing I had in the past? So it's personalization.
That's impressive.
And once you reach personalization, then you can get into a different level of loyalty. You can start to offer people things that are attractive to the way that they order with you. You can start to understand the times that they are going to want to be communicated to and not want to be communicated to. And, you know, if we ever crack the world of like crypto and NFT loyalty, all this other stuff that kind of is fun and interesting, the only real way to do that is to receive that as a restaurant, I should say, is going to be through a digital channel. You're going to need to tell the machine that I have this NFT and therefore I get to get a extra ice cream, you know, or whatever.
Right.
It's not going to be by telling an employee who's going to bring out a book of all the NFTs that could be possible here and the different varieties and the gold versus the silver versus the platinum versus the,
yeah.
You know.
That's funny. And let me ask you, is any, because I love the idea of like being able to know exactly what I ordered and it doesn't matter who I am. So it's not necessarily like my personal info of Angelo's age and it, but just like it knows it's me. Any pushback on that side on the facial recognition?
Yeah, so not really. We allow brands to opt in or opt out if they want to use it. Like some brands might you know, they may say, hey, this isn't for us. And that's cool. That's fine. This isn't the idea is like the camera's not on until you ask it to be. So, so it's really opt in by the guest. Okay. You know, it doesn't happen without you knowing it's happening. And you know, I think what's fun about it is, biometrics are back on the upswing. I see this in airports now where it's not just Clear, which is the one we all know, but Delta has this like face scanning software, like on your boarding. Like I've seen it. I don't even know what it does, but it tells you who you are.
Same here. And it's not only Delta. I've seen a few other airlines do it too. And it's kind of unclear what it is, but
Well, clearly in the entire environment, once you pass security, they have your picture and know who you are. Okay. So that it, what I'm just saying is it normalizes the idea that certain entities can have this and do good by it. And I'm going to get through the boarding line quicker. And so, you know, is that something that we want, you know, you want to opt into having a restaurant know this so that you can order your smoothie the exact same way the 5 days a week you get your smoothie right after your workout. You know, I would love to live in a world where the person behind the counter knows me, knows my order, like I'm a regular at a fine dining restaurant, but that just doesn't happen. I think that world, it doesn't exist, and I don't think it ever will. You know, and I think that in a fine dining restaurant, it will. That's beautiful. That's why we had Resy. That's why we had Nose. That's why at Resy, we took all the guest information that was shared across restaurants, right? You could put a profile in and say who you are and tell every restaurant about it. We democratized the dining experience. In Bite, we're trying to personalize it and give you hospitality that was not achievable before.
Interesting. And for our listeners, right, like we have a lot of restaurant operators listening in on this. And so what does the process just look like at a very high level? Someone might be listening to this and say, you know what, it's something I've been thinking about. It's been on my radar. This sounds interesting. How could they learn about Bite? And what's the typical customer journey look like?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously we have a website. Go to that. Reach out to us because everything's really specific. If you sat through the podcast this long, you heard me say how specific it can be. And I would hate for you to try it, not do it well, and then think kiosk isn't for you, because I promise you there's a way to execute on it well. And, you know, talk to our team. You know, we're happy to be consultative in that. We're not a company that's some hard sell on what it is. And you know, Resy was like this too. We were teaching people a new way to think about something, and that takes a little bit of trust. So, we're more than happy to have kind of an open conversation about it. The other thing that you can do just to, you know, perhaps if you're sitting there saying, is this the right thing for me? I invite you to go listen to some of the publicly traded restaurant companies' phone calls. Go listen to Shake Shack's earnings call and hear Katie Fogarty, CFO, talk about kiosk is the most profitable channel that they have over the 400 units that they have. Recently, I forget who it was specifically, but was saying that Firehouse Subs wants to get kiosk everywhere. Their fiduciary responsibility is to make money for their company. And to do so in a responsible way that they care about their guests. I promise you, they're not lying. I didn't pay them to shill. It works. You just got to figure it out, you know. You can always reach out to me as well. I'm on LinkedIn, and I pretty much answer everybody who would reach out there. So.
I love that. And then I'm sure there's many, but like any kind of anecdotes or success stories you can share that come top of mind, like a client that implemented and maybe like a clear win they got.
I don't know if I'll go into any specific client.
Yeah, you don't have to say their name, just more like a win.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's one client who actually, while the pandemic was devastating to their, to the inside of their restaurant business, and they had the restaurant shut down, they said, what can we do to reimagine the in-store experience while this is happening? Let's use this as a opportunity. They were able to put kiosk in. And when they reopened with a little bit less staff because, of course, the idea of how many people were coming back into stores was a question mark. So they had to be throttling on that. And they found that the kiosk orders were about 50 to 60% higher than a guest ordering at a cashier. And so this was a coffee and breakfast related spot. Okay. And what they found was that there was just a way higher attachment rate to all the food items. And so maybe they were just known for being a coffee spot, or maybe it was the idea that a beautiful avocado toast was visual, and you could see it and go, yeah, I actually want one of those right now. Right. I have time. That's just throwing an avocado on a piece of bread. I have time for that. And they had 50 to 60% increase in average check for those orders, through the kiosk. And so, I mean, it's just a no brainer, right? It's marketing and showing your menu, merchandising your menu in a totally different way. And maybe somebody purchases more in this digital environment than when you're talking to them. You can only really ask them, do you want fries with that once, right? Like you don't, on a digital screen, you can have a bunch of other things there that are being quote unquote advertised and marketed right. while somebody's placing the order they want.
Right. That makes a ton of sense. And I know another hot topic in the industry is like, you know, the idea of like dynamic pricing because of some of these digital platforms, not only kiosks, but even just like online ordering and whatnot.
Online, sure.
Yeah, yeah. What's your thought when it comes to dynamic pricing in restaurants? I'm just curious to get your take.
Yeah, sure. I mean, dynamic pricing is interesting. It's early days. It's unclear if it's very hard to be, let's say, one of these kind of like urban, you know, coastal people and say this works for everybody. I've now traveled around the country to the middle of Kentucky to, you know, to Texas, to Wyoming, talking to restaurateurs, and guests are different everywhere. And so do I think that a guest in the middle of the country, you know, or in a more rural area is ready for dynamic pricing? No, I don't think they are. Do I think that this could work in certain situations? For sure. And the thing about dynamic pricing that people misconstrue is dynamic pricing means up. It means down too, right? Yeah. It does mean kind of the discounting side of things. But I think right now it is in its infancy, and I'm keeping an eye on it. I have more preference to think about revenue management for restaurants. My buddy, Mike Lukianoff, who runs Extrapede 360, he's, to me, he's the smartest mind in restaurant data that there is, okay? He just thinks about data for restaurants all day long, and he zooms out and says, this is about revenue management. It's not just about figuring out price dynamics, but menu dynamics. And mm-hmm. So when you think about that, it's kind of interesting. What are you offering during shoulder periods versus during main periods? Can you offer a bigger menu? Can you, you know, obviously there's like the midday discount for the pastries that are going to go bad. Okay, fine. That's dynamic pricing. But, you know, there's brands that have experimented with a late night menu that doesn't exist until 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. This is how you think about revenue management. It's not just about, do I tick this price up down or down based off of demand?
Right. That's interesting.
So, yeah, it's a component, I think.
That makes sense. And like from your point of view, like I'm curious on the digital kiosk side, like one thing that comes to mind is the idea of, you know, menu engineering, and you kind of lightly touch on it, but you know, menu engineering is super important, where to place things, images, know that, but obviously on a printed menu, it's quite limited. So I'm just curious, like, can you touch on that? Like, how do you guys maybe think about menu engineering? Cause you have that, you know, flexibility of it being digital.
Well, you nailed it. We think about it a lot. You nailed it because I can move any kiosks. I can move one kiosk's menu to have different, you know, items first and items second versus a different one in the same store.
And are you guys measuring this and like giving that feedback loop to the restaurants?
This is why ordering off of a kiosk is its own discipline. It's its own channel. It's its own. This isn't taking an app and putting it on a bigger screen and saying, great. And this is what everybody gets wrong. This is why I say to your audience, come have a conversation. Because if you just tried to do it the same way you did your app or did your online ordering, you failed before you started. Mm. And if you're not thinking about all the things that we know 5-6 years into it, then you're not giving yourself the best chance to make it work. I mean, we think about which kiosk is busiest in the restaurant. And should that, you know, let's just, for the example, Angela, let's just say that there was a promotional pop-up that you wanted to make sure everyone understands the McRib is back. Okay, we'll take McDonald's. Yeah. The kiosk that's closest to the door that has the biggest amount of parking spots outside of it should not have that pop-up. And you will increase your throughput by like 3 to 5 guests an hour. 3 to 5 guests an hour is X profitability over X weeks. And it's like X stores, it's $1 billion. Okay.
It's
right?
A lot
like,
of money. Yeah.
And it's because you had a pop-up and you took the pop-up off of one of the three kiosks you have. So it's not just about, I have one website. It's like you have 6 entry points. How do you think about this? What menu items should be where? If I can recognize Angelo and even just put the menu items that he's ordered to the top and I shave time, how does that impact my profitability? Yeah. There's so much into it.
Yeah. And super interesting. And for people listening, I just want to reiterate that point, because I think a lot of people really think of it exactly like that. It's like, I got my phone here. It's a bigger phone and that's it. But I think you're starting to shed some light. And so for people that have that curiosity, I think like definitely book a time, see if it makes sense. But there's a lot more than just making this a massive phone. And then just kind of wrapping things up, I'd love to know what's next for you, for Byte. Like, you know, what's on the roadmap? If
yeah,
you can share. Byte, maybe sure. Some of the stuff is private, but yeah.
You know, our goals in 2024 are to continue to be the best kiosk for guests. And so we'll go along that path. But in the industry in general, you know, I think what's really interesting to look at is just all the automation. So Byte and kiosk lives, you know, if you will, in this kind of space of automating, you know, parts of the experience in a restaurant. Right. You know, I got a chance to check out Kernel in New York, which is Steve Ells, founder of Chipotle's new concept, where he has a, you know, he has a, maybe it's like 200 square foot robot that is cooking food, cleaning dishes type of stuff. It's, well, not cleaning, I guess getting them into the, they're getting them into the, to the, to the bus, bin.
Got it.
But, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And there's like two people who actually work inside of it. And so they're being assisted by the robot. And then, you know, out in Naperville in, Chicago, been to the Sweet Green that's there. That's really even more autonomous than that. Like putting your whole salad together. Wow. I have my friend Eric Hansen is doing crazy things with burgers where, it's more of the angle of not trying to be totally autonomous, but cook 16 burgers at a time as efficiently as possible where the person doesn't have to pay attention to it. You know, and his company is, really innovating. I think they're based in Asia and, you know, he's running it over here. So, pretty cool stuff.
That's awesome. And then last but not least, I was like ending off with just advice from fellow entrepreneurs or even just restaurateurs. So any advice for people looking to maybe, you know, either start their own thing or get involved in the hospitality tech scene?
It's so much easier to do it when you learn it on somebody else's dime. That's what I would say. So if you want to open a restaurant, we had a ton of people at USHG who did this. You want to open a restaurant, go work for the best. Go find the best and go work for them for 1 year. You can delay what you want to open for 1 year. You're not going to get paid a lot of money, okay? Working in restaurants does not afford a lavish lifestyle for most, okay? Go do it and get the education on how to do it right. Go learn. It's so easy to do that and learn from the people who know how to do it right, and then go do it. And you will increase your likelihood of success so much more. Go be an account manager for a great tech company, maybe on the bigger side that has a little bit more established than a Byte. You know, someplace that they have systems and processes. That's what happened for me. I got to learn technology, you know, as it relates to restaurants at Avero.
Right.
And I think that those folks who want to do and go one step into the apprenticeship side first are going to be wildly more successful than if you just try to dive in and figure it all out yourself.
So that's awesome advice. Well, with that said, once again, Brandon Barton, CEO of Byte. You can check them out at getbyte.com. Thank you for joining us on the Whisking It All podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, man. A lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Feel free to check out whisk.ai for more resources and schedule a demo with one of our product specialists to see if it's a fit for you.